The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour, hi, Canada, Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway on this Tuesday, March the 29th, in the year of our Lord, 2022, I should say. Peace talks have begun again in Turkey, and this is a good news story. It's not necessarily the final set of talks. They may move somewhere else, but they've started in Istanbul. President Erdogan of Turkey addressed the delegations, emphasizing that Turkey believed it was time for concrete results. The Ukrainian foreign minister has warned all of the delegates from Ukraine not to touch anything or drink anything that they don't bring themselves on the table because they're afraid of poisoning, and they are right to be afraid of poisoning. But this mere whisper of progress in peace talks has sent markets up around the world. Erpin has been liberated from Russian control, and there are lots of advances, tactical advances by Ukrainian troops around Kyiv, but Mariupol will probably fall today, and then we'll find out whether or not Putin is serious about settling for a land corridor with no acknowledgement of sovereignty. Now, I am listening to Andrew Roberts' Churchill Walking with Destiny book, listening to it, because it's a very finely read book. And I am just finished up with the Yalta Conference. Churchill thought he had figured out Stalin. Churchill's the greatest man of the last century. Might be the greatest man of the half millennium. Luther is in competition for them, for the millennium guy. Churchill and Luther did the most to change the world or make the world as we know it today. And people say Gutenberg, but look, printing press is great. Depends what you put in the press to change people. Inventors are wonderful, but in the end, they're technicians. It's the idea of people who change the world, and Luther changed the world by making the idea of the gospel available to everyone. And then Churchill saved the world from Hitler and thought he had saved it from Stalin. And so I listened to it twice. I probably spent 7 hours listening to this book yesterday. I've been listening to it generally. And I turned it off around 9 o'clock last night and did a little show prep and went to sleep. But I've just been absorbed by Churchill during the war and how you conduct war and Churchill's rules of leadership. Number one, never scapegoat anybody. He had an opportunity to scapegoat many, many people many, many times. He always said, no, that's my fault. Even when it wasn't his fault. I love that about that. That's the opposite of Joe Biden. Now I'm coming to the story of the day. Joe Biden is home. There is no need not to criticize him now. He's fine. And the trip was a disaster. And so yesterday, either Dr. Jill Biden or Ron Klain or somebody who didn't go on the trip, somebody who isn't with Tony Blinken, who is not part of the, oh, my God, what did we do in Poland gang, which is almost every normal American, got to Joe and said, you know, you just can't let people walk over you like this. Fight back. So he did a presser yesterday to, I guess, prove that at 79, he isn't completely shambling around the world saying whatever comes to his head. Peter Doocy. Well, let's start actually with cut 18. This is NBC reporter, cut number 18.
Number one, I'm not walking anything back. The fact of the matter is, I was expressing the more outrage I felt toward the way Putin is dealing and the actions of this man, just brutality. Half the children in Ukraine. I had just come from being with those families. But I want to make it clear, I wasn't then, nor am I now, articulating a policy change. I was expressing the moral outrage that I feel, and I make no apologies for it.
Okay, he's reading from, that's Nora, he's reading from his notes. He's just reading. And then Peter Doocy gets up, and this is one of the most remarkable exchanges I've ever seen with the president, because we all saw what he did in his trip. Three major fiascos from the podium. And so here's the exchange, cut number 17, with Peter Doocy.
Are you worried that other leaders in the world are going to start to doubt that America is back if some of these big things that you say on the world stage keep getting walked back?
What's getting walked back?
made it sound like, just in the last couple days, it sounded like he told U.S. troops they were going to Ukraine. It sounded like he said it was possible the U.S. would use a chemical weapon. And it sounded like you were calling for regime change in Russia. And we know...
None of the three occurred.
Mr. President?
You interpret the language that way. I was talking to the troops. We're talking about helping train the troops in that are the Ukrainian troops that are in Poland. That's what the context. I sat there with those guys for a couple hours. That's what we talked about.
So when you said you're going to see when you're there, you were not intending to
I was referring this. To with meeting with and talking with the Ukrainian troops who are in Poland.
And when you said a chemical
Stop.
Weapon.
I got to play Rush Limbaugh, the great one, from 1992. This is October 22nd, 1992, cut 21.
I feel doom and gloom about me. I mean, I can't tell you. This is horrible. But I, ladies and gentlemen, hear it 12 minutes after the hour on the 22nd of October. I'm here to tell you that I have decided to endorse the candidacy of Bill Clinton for president. Phyllis in the Bronx in New York. Hello.
Hello. Hello. My name is Phyllis.
Yes, ma'am.
I am a conservative, and I back my president 100%. I work for the Board of Ed. I am homesick today, but now I'm really sick. Rush, what are you doing to us? I'm sick and tired of the liberals in this country who are pushing our buttons.
What are you talking about?
I mean, you're backing Mr. Bill Clinton.
I am not. I am
not. You just said you're backing.
I never said that.
You said you are going to change your vote. You're not voting for the president. You're going to have to vote for Bill Clinton.
I did not say that I was going to vote for Bill Clinton.
But I heard you say those words.
No. You're just trying to twist my words and turn them around. I never said it.
What did you say? Could you just tell me? You said you couldn't. You know, I can't even talk. I'm so upset. I'm practically ready for tears.
I don't know. You keep wanting to look. All I can tell you is I'm tired. Everybody wants to look into my past.
No. Not looking at your past.
It was 23 minutes ago. You keep talking about something that happened 23 minutes ago. It's irrelevant. Can't we move on with things that matter?
You said about changing your entire conservative view?
Can't we talk about the things that you keep wanting to say what I said 23 minutes ago? It doesn't matter.
It does. You
it
said
does
it all
not.
Over the country.
I didn't say
it.
Hat tip to Dash Patterson, who, by the way, the Fetching Mrs. Radio blogger, is now calling him Dash at home. So we all like that. Hats off to Dash Patterson for finding the Rush bit from 20 years ago. Because it's so, is it 30 years ago? It's 30 years ago. Rush did that bit. And it was hilarious 30 years ago, hearing it in real time. And yesterday, Joe Biden, life imitates art. That was Rush being the art maker on the radio, the artist, and Joe Biden imitating it, and it's not funny when it's the President of the United States saying, nope, that wasn't me. Reminded me of Tommy Smothers. More coming up. I'm Hugh Hewitt. David Drucker is with the Washington Examiner, author of In Trump's Shadow, bestseller out there still, and you need to read it to be ready for the 2022 midterms. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Hugh. I almost called you by a different name and was going to have to walk that back. So.
We're going to call. But you could have said I didn't say that. You could have said I didn't call you by a different name. So what did you make of that exchange with Peter Ducey? I didn't say that. It's like Rush Limbaugh in 1992. It's a bit right out of the Rush Limbaugh show in 1992.
I don't know. I mean, it's a bit like Saturday Night Live, I suppose. Look, you know, it's funny. If you just read it in a vacuum.
Wait, stop for a second, David. You're right. It's Rosanna Danadana.
Right.
It's Rosanna Danadana. Joe Biden is channeling Rosanna Danadana. These are all cultural references that our audience under the age of 50 doesn't understand. But you're right.
Exactly. Yeah. Look, if you read that exchange in a vacuum, it actually sounds really good. It's like, no, I meant exactly what I said. Maybe you people just didn't understand it, and it was something very important. And in that sense, it was great, right? No, this guy's a problem. Obviously, he's got to go. I was expressing a sense of moral outrage as the leader of the free world. And good American leaders do this all the time. Of course, the problem is that he delivered otherwise a pretty decent speech in Warsaw in a very important location and created a headline that distracted from it. And now there's this sense of who's on first, not so much in U.S. policy, but in who's calling the shots and what shots they're calling exactly. And it's become its own story. And these kinds of stories can undermine the impact of good rhetoric and good policy. And I think that is the issue. You know?
It is. I'm also watching the Salem News Channel feed of this David Drucker, and my head is about the half the size of your head. So you're going to have to shrink your head and your headshot, please. Now, I want to tell you, though, it does sound good when you read it. I mean, it reads well. What do the countries of the world, most importantly, what does Putin think of this, do you think?
Well, I think that's a really good question. The reason I think, normally I would look at this and I would say, well, Putin is not going to get a clear message that U.S. policy is X and there are going to be dire consequences if he does X. The one thing that's working in our favor is that policy hasn't deviated, and it's not just us. So,
okay, let me reframe the question. It is a really good question. It is the question. What is the worst conclusion that Putin and or Xi can draw from this?
Well, in my opinion, the worst conclusion they could draw from this is that the U.S. is not resolute when it says that it's invading other countries and doing other nefarious acts will not stand and will be met firmly.
That's not the worst conclusion, David.
What's the worst conclusion?
He's infirm and doesn't actually, he reads whatever's put in front of him. His momentary attention span, he's not impaired, he's just infirm. And so when they give him something to read, he walks out and he reads it. And he gets combustible when you challenge him. And Leon Panetta says he's Irish, excuse it. And Peter Ducey says, you didn't say that? I didn't say that. It's just, they've got to conclude.
The problem, and look, I don't necessarily disagree with you, Hugh, but the thing is, the man doesn't just read what's put in front of him. The president says things all the time that he wants to say that are not in the written text. I think the issue is that it looks as though there's nobody in, that he doesn't have control of his White House. I think that's a potential problem.
You know, I expect Joe Biden to walk out and say, I am Legion. There are many Bidens. And today I'm going to be Biden the Defiant. And today I'll be Biden the Angry. And tomorrow I'll be Biden the I didn't say that. If there's any difference from Trump articulated for me, you've sat down with a former president many times. It's in Trump's shadow.
I actually think this is very similar to Trump in this way. Trump, it's just the interpretation was different, right? Trump would often say things that he later said he didn't say or that his staff would try to explain and that many supporters, I mean, there's a whole industry created on what Trump really meant was.
Right, take him seriously but not literally stuff.
Yes.
That's Selena Zito. Yep.
Well, I mean, that's how a lot of voters took him, and that's what Selena was reporting on. A lot of people misunderstood what she was saying. It wasn't her. It was how a lot of Republican voters understood him.
Right.
Rightly or wrongly.
It wasn't her opinion. She was just saying.
I think the issue, right. I think the one, look, I will say, you know, a difference with Trump is Trump always seemed to be the one in control of the problem. Sometimes Biden does not look like he's in control of the problem, but I think that's something you and I can discuss, and that's interesting. I think the net result is actually the same.
That's very shrewd and clear. That's very shrewd. Trump was in charge of the narrative. We're not sure that Biden is. although he reclaims it momentarily every now and then, like he did or tried to do with Ducey yesterday. David M. Drucker knows his stuff. Follow him on Twitter. Go get In Trump's Shadow. Need a new headshot, or we need to bring the shot in closer on me, Harley. I think Dwayne's just mad at me for editing Rush so well. Don't go anywhere, America. Hour number two of the Hugh Hewitt Show straight ahead. And no Will Smith here on the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway on a cold Beltway morning. As a young man, I had the great privilege and honor of working for Richard Nixon. As a young woman, my next guest, Dr. Monica Crowley, had that job when he had moved back to New York, and she was a freshly minted PhD from Columbia. And so the question of what do older statesmen do is not new to either Dr. Crowley or myself. Dr. Crowley, welcome back. Good to have you, Monica.
Hugh, it is great to be back with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you've got a new podcast. I want people to know about this. If they want serious, especially on national security, foreign affairs, and international finance issues, where do they find the Monica Crowley Show?
Yes, well, thank you so much, Hugh. I launched the podcast yesterday. It's called the Monica Crowley Podcast. You can get it, subscribe on any podcast platform you use. So whether you prefer Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeart. We are up everywhere. We launched yesterday. I'm going to be doing it 3 days a week, so we will drop new episodes on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And please go check it out because, yeah, you're right. We're going to cover all of the issues that matter, and there are a lot of serious issues facing America and freedom and the West, but we're also going to have a lot of fun, too. So I hope you'll join us on this journey.
The Monica Crowley Podcast. Everywhere podcasts are available, go and listen to it. Now, Monica, I gave the introduction. You are a PhD in international affairs. You work with Richard Nixon in his retirement, in his later years. I was in his early years of his retirement, not after. So we were separated by like 15 years, but we both worked with an older Nixon. I am leading Andrew Roberts, listening to Andrew Roberts' book on Churchill at 70 after 5 years of war, and he slowed down. We both know that President Trump did not slow down. Although there was often a lot of inconsistency in his delivery of remarks. I mean, he was never, ever infirm. What are we going to do for 3 years? And I'm asking sincerely as an American, what do you think Ron Klain ought to do as chief of staff? What do you think Dr. Jill Biden ought to do and Tony Blinken? Because this is not sustainable.
Yeah. You know, it's really unbelievable. I tweeted the other day, Hugh, that the president of the United States apparently doesn't know what planet he's on, and the vice president of the United States is in a perpetual state of nervous breakdown. And while people sort of chuckle at that, it points to a very serious issue because we are in a slow-moving, slow-motion constitutional crisis here. And the other day I tweeted, it's time to take away grandpa's car keys. And again, you know, it's sort of easy to make light of this, but you've got the commander-in-chief of the United States who is clearly cognitively impaired. And what we know from just observing people in our own lives, never mind the president, is that once you hit a certain tipping point, and we all might get there, Hugh, but we don't want it in the president of the United States. Once you hit a tipping point, the decline actually accelerates. It doesn't slow down. It doesn't really plateau. It accelerates. And I think that's what we're witnessing now in the president.
Now, Dr. Crowley, I'm very careful with words. You used impaired. I use the word infirm. I don't think he's disabled. I just think he's old.
Well, yes, but I think there is cognitive impairment there that comes with aging. And once again, you know, you can be young old, and then you can be old old. And that tipping point happens pretty fast. And once you hit it, the acceleration of the decline really happens.
That's interesting. Now, you know what I'm talking about with Churchill. He was In 4445, Roberts records that his cabinet colleagues became very concerned. They became rambling and disorganized. But then he would rally and give a two-hour speech, the best of his life, on January 15th, 1945, in the House of Commons. And then he would ramble. And there are peaks and valleys as you get older. Richard Nixon in retirement was sharp until he died, was he not?
Yes, he was. And in fact, to the day he died, he used to handwrite all of his speeches on yellow legal pads. He would handwrite them out and then commit them to memory. And that's how he exercised his brain. So it's entirely possible to get to your end of days being right sharp as a tack. That is not the case with Joe Biden. You know, it's one thing to have the president and the vice president make a hash of domestic policy and domestic policy politics while they're here in the United States. It's another thing to have the American commander-in-chief go on foreign soil and make a hash of things that involve war and peace and life and death. That's when you know that there is a huge crisis here. And when you ask what to do, look, a lot of people are asking to invoke the 25th Amendment, which would kick in when a president is incapacitated. I'm not sure Biden is wholly incapacitated, but when you start making these kinds of grave mistakes abroad that involve putting America's lives at risk, America's interests at risk, Hugh, somebody has to step in and decide what to do next, because I don't see how we go another 3 days with this president, never mind another 3 years.
Well, now, the issue you raise is not going to happen. I mean, the 25th Amendment is not going to be invoked. It's a very arduous and difficult process in any event, and he's not going to be removed by the 25th Amendment, absent a Woodrow Wilson-like event. That was everything is designed for the last crisis. That was designed for Woodrow Wilson's stroke, and it took 40 years to pass. I want to go back to Churchill in the war. He flew to Greece on Christmas Day in 1944 to, quote, save the burning ember from the fire of communism. And he did. I mean, he still had his wits about him. He was 70 years old, though. The president is 79. I want to know what you think Putin and Xi think about this, because that's what, and Khamenei, that's what matters most. Not what you and I think, but what do those three tyrants think?
Well, here's what I think all of America's enemies think. I think they take a look at this president who has always been a hack, not the brightest bulb in the closet here or in the socket, never the sharpest knife in the drawer. And they look at this guy, and I think if he had been president 20 years ago, their calculation would have been, okay, America is weak, and we can take full advantage of this moment and advance our interests, because we know the weak commander-in-chief is not going to retaliate or respond in any meaningful way. Now they've got Joe Biden as a hack, and now on top of that, he is cognitively impaired. So if you're America's enemies, whether it's Putin or the Iranian regime, the North Korean regime, China, you're taking a look at this and you're saying, okay, the United States is crippled because they do not have a strong president or strong administration that's going to act in any significant way to push back if we move. That's why all of them are either moving or calculating to move. And frankly, Hugh, I can't blame them, because they see a window of opportunity here over the next couple of years, and they are going to take it.
My guest is Dr. Monica Crowley. She was former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. She is a PhD from Columbia. She has authored many books. You've seen her on Fox News for years. She has a new podcast, the Monica Crowley Podcast. Monica, you say impaired. I say infirm. Let's not argue that. We're not doctors. Let's argue, though, what Nixon would do. What should W do? President Trump is running for office again, so he's not going to give President Biden any advice. What should W? I think W might actually call him up and say, look, Joe, stay out of sight. You just can't do this. Is that reasonable to expect? He's not going to resign. They're not going to invoke the 25th, but we have to put up some guardrails.
Yeah, I know. It's true. Look, what you say about the 25th Amendment is probably correct. I will say this, that Democrats are absolutely ruthless, and they will move on him if they want to dispose of him. Look at what happened to Andrew Cuomo in New York. He was the king of New York. They were talking about him as a presidential candidate. It was only when members powerful members of his own party decided he was no longer useful and they wanted to get rid of him and they shivved him. So it's possible that they will
do
this with Biden.
That's, you know, happened to RN, right? Goldwater came down Pennsylvania Avenue and said, you got to go.
You got to go. There's no more support. Your support has collapsed. So if members of his own party decide he's got to bounce, they will shiv him, Hugh. So just keep that in the back of your mind. You mentioned W. I'm not sure that Biden has a good relationship with any of his Republican predecessors, but perhaps a Democratic predecessor, whether it's Obama, whether it's Bill Clinton, they may pick up the phone and say, Joe, we got to get a handle on this situation and maybe provide him or Ron Klain or Mrs. Biden some advice about how to do this. But we are now, Hugh, at the point where the President of the United States must not speak publicly about issues of war and peace.
Quick question, Monica Crowley.
Yesterday was a catastrophe.
It was a catastrophe. Quick question. Would you welcome Hillary Clinton into the White House as a senior advisor?
I would not.
Okay. Look, I'm looking for anything because we cannot do this for 3 years. I will go listen to the Monica Crowley podcast because the Monica Crowley podcast will, in fact, be informed by decades of smart interactions with the world's leaders. She's a lot younger than I am, but her podcast is so well informed. The Monica Crowley podcast. Thank you, Dr. Crowley. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
Calling for regime change in Russia, and we know
none of the three occurred.
None of the three occurred.
None of the three.
Mr. President?
You interpret the language that way. I was talking.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. That's President Biden yesterday in an unnerving exchange with Peter Ducey. I'm joined now by Senator Cotton of Arkansas. Senator Tom Cotton, a regular guest, Republican from Arkansas. Good morning, Senator. Look, this is very serious, and I am a patriot. I do not want the President of the United States to be infirm or mocked by foreign tyrants. What do we do?
Good morning, Hugh. It's good to be on with you.
Thank you.
That press conference was unnerving, the well-chosen word, although I have to say probably not as unnerving as the president's statements during his trip to Europe last week. Obviously, the most unsettling and imprudent statement was when he, in effect, called for regime change in nuclear-armed Russia, but he also seemed to suggest that the United States might use chemical weapons against Russia, or that the troops we have in places like Poland may soon be deploying to Ukraine, contrary to his announced policy. And then again, he denied it all yesterday in that press conference.
When you walk back a walk back, that's what's unnerving.
Yeah. And, you know, Hugh, one can agree on the merits with what Joe Biden said about the treachery of Vladimir Putin. If you're a talk radio host or an editorial columnist or just a normal American, but when you're an elected official, especially when you're the president, ad-libbing and speaking about it, I think Joe Biden called it his emotional outrage is highly unwise and it's dangerous to our national security. And most presidents throughout history have known that. They don't get to engage in off-the-cuff, extemporaneous moralizing that could threaten the interests and the safety of the American people.
Can I add something? I've been listening to Martin Gilbert's Churchill book, Walking with Destiny. And for 5 years, Churchill cried through the whole war. He's the most emotional man to ever lead the free world. And he was very emotional and he was very involved. But we were in total war, Senator. That's where we don't want to go right now. We can't have an off-the-cuff chief executive.
No, Hugh, we cannot. And at this point, with just under 3 years to go in the Biden presidency, I genuinely think it would be best for all involved, to include Joe Biden, but especially for the American people, if the president would simply stop speaking publicly in an extemporaneous fashion. He should not ad-lib in speeches when he's reading from a teleprompter. And frankly, I don't think he should continue to take questions or do press conferences. I know that lots of Republicans and conservatives like to criticize the president for his lack of accessibility or his refusal to hold regular press conferences. But I think for the good of the nation and for the safety of our people, we should all agree broadly, we on the center right in America, that if Joe Biden would simply stop speaking extemporaneously, stop doing press conferences or press availabilities, we'll agree that that's not a solid ground to criticize him. Look at
I will agree 100%.
Yeah, 100%. There's plenty of grounds to criticize the president on the results and the outcomes of his policies and decisions. We don't need to criticize him on the process point of he's not answering enough questions. If he'll simply agree to stop answering questions, stop ad-libbing and ripping off the cuff from a prepared speech on a teleprompter, if we could get 3 years of Joe Biden speaking in deliberate fashion on words that have been carefully reviewed and vetted, even if we disagree with those words, that would be safer than what happened over the last 5 days.
That's a mature and smart response, because in all seriousness, we can't do this for 3 years. And I asked David Drucker in hour one and Byron York in hour two, what do you think Putin, Xi, Khamenei think is going on? And they all had good responses. Drucker suggested they may not know who's in charge in the United States after yesterday.
Well, if you put yourself in their shoes in Moscow or Beijing or Tehran, what's happened over the last 5 days has probably been confusing, but it's also been, in some cases, a windfall. Vladimir Putin has been claiming for almost his entire time in office in Russia that the United States wants to engineer his ouster. He's believed that and fervently declared that repeatedly. And Joe Biden essentially gave him a massive propaganda victory over the weekend simply by going off the cuff, clearly speaking off teleprompter on his emotional feelings. Which, again, I think we all have very strong feelings about the devastation we see in Ukraine and about the villainy of Vladimir Putin. And again, it's fine to say that if you're a normal American, if you're a talk radio host, if you're an editorial columnist. But when you are responsible for the safety of the American people, as I am, as other elected senators and congressmen are, and most especially as the president is, you know, it's imprudent to be moralizing extemporaneously in such a fraught moment.
Yeah, I want to refer back to Churchill again. I know you're a student of Churchill. When he goes to Yalta, FDR, and it's in Crimea, it's so relevant to today, it's almost ghostly, spooky. He goes off to Crimea, and FDR arrives. It's 10 weeks away from when FDR dies. And everyone knows FDR is out of gas and is failing. Churchill is 70 years old. He's complaining about being 70 years old. And his colleagues say he's up and down. He has good days and bad days, but he's still Churchill. And he can get the House of Commons to support him. He can get a big show. He can give a two-hour speech. So I'm actually thinking, what do we do to prop up the president right now in the eyes of the world, Senator Cotton? To confirm that the United States is strong and steady?
For the last month, the Congress has actually been pushing the president to take a firmer stance with Ukraine. It's a very clear pattern, whether it's sanctions or weapons deliveries or the ban on Russian oil imports or revoking Russia's permanent most favored nation status. The pattern is clear. The president is usually a few days behind Congress to include members of his own party, and then he takes a decision. We need to continue that, and I think Congress will continue it, even if many of the Democrats in Congress still hesitate from some of the tougher measures I would advocate. They're at least tougher than this president, and I think it's an important signal to Vladimir Putin and our other adversaries that Congress continue to assert itself and take a stand on behalf of international stability and support the Ukrainian people as they do an amazing, miraculous even, job of defending their own home and defending their own soil. And we need to pull out all the stops to ensure they have what it takes to defend their home.
There is an article in The Atlantic this morning, sidebar, saying don't ease up now. And that means flood the Ukrainians with whatever they need, from anti-ship missiles, which are still not there as far as I can tell, to these new drones, the mini drones that are, I mean, the display of advanced weaponry is pretty amazing. But they haven't got enough of it, Senator.
Yeah, I mean, Hugh, if I can be partial here, I think this war once again shows the primacy of infantry in warfare. Russia has vastly outnumbered Ukraine in mechanized vehicles and tanks and armored personnel carriers and mechanized infantry or mechanized artillery. However, it's been shown to be deeply vulnerable when not supported by the infantry against infantry forces that have mobile man-portable weapons. The javelins and the in-laws provided by the British have been devastating these columns of armor. So once again, if I can be partial, we have seen the supremacy of infantry, even in modern combat, and in some ways the advances you cited, things like the one-way explosive drones or small surveillance drones sided with off-the-shelf technology such as thermal imaging of the kind that you can use in the woods in America. Those go to show the primacy of infantry. Ukraine has more than enough infantry to defeat the Russian forces if they have those weapons, and we have to continue to provide those weapons for them because you are right. That article says it's no time to let up. We're barely 1 month into this war. It could go on for many, many months, and we cannot flag in our attention or in our dedication to the Ukrainian people. Again, they are not asking us to fight this war for them. They are asking us to help them fight their own war in defense of their own home.
Now, Senator, I'm not even an armchair private, much less an armchair corporal, sergeant, or officer. I am an armchair talk show host, but I remember 1991 changed everyone's view of what war could be. So did 2003 with the American massed combined forces moving forward. I am now amazed. I don't know if big platforms are ever going to be as significant again. These are important discussions to have, but they don't supersede the discussion about what to do about the president. So my question is, would you welcome someone like, whether it's former Secretary Clinton, Admiral Stavridis, someone who is serious going into the White House? Because I'm afraid they're about to give the store away in Iran, in Vienna to Iran. I really don't know who's running things.
I'm very worried about the status of those negotiations in Iran or regarding Iran in Vienna, Hugh. From all reports, we're down to a single momentous choice, and that's whether we remove the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps from the terrorist designation list. Again, if it wasn't a big deal to Iran, if it wasn't vital to Iran's power, then they wouldn't be holding out for it. I would remind everyone that Joe Biden may be on the verge of delisting the Revolutionary Guard Corps at a time when three former high-ranking American officials must have full-time 24/7 security details because of threat assassination of that very Revolutionary Guard Corps.
Agree.
But for both Ukraine, for Iran, for China, I do think it would be welcome for the president to bring on board someone who is a senior statesman, wizened in the ways of the world. You mentioned Jim Stavridis. That might be one. It might be hard to get Bob Gates out of retirement, but I think that would be a great addition to his team as well. Someone who has the independent stature and gravitas that so many of his team lack, that they can help right the ship.
That makes a lot of sense. Senator, has the president called you?
We have not talked lately, Hugh, no.
I'm just curious. We're in the middle of a war. You're one of the most influential Republicans in the national security community. And he hasn't said, come down, let's talk about this. I mean, Nixon had people in the office all the time.
I think, Hugh, the president's aides keep a very, very close grip on his schedule and his calendar. I don't think, it's not just me. I think it's pretty much every Republican. And for that matter, a lot of Democrats, I think they're access to the president over the last 14 months has declined pretty significantly as well. I just think that's the way the White House conducts business.
Is that a good way to conduct business?
Well, obviously, it's led to a lot of fiascos, most notably in Afghanistan. But also, I think, the results over the last month, really the last 6 months with Ukraine, it's led in part to this war that we see and the kind of stumbles you saw in Europe last week. So I do think, as you said, the president would benefit from consulting more widely. Look, he doesn't have to consult with his partisan critics in Congress if he doesn't want to. It doesn't hurt my feeling. But gentlemen, like you mentioned, Admiral Stavridis or Bob Gates, General Jim Jones, who he knew as Barack Obama's first national security advisor, there are many graybeards out there who are not partisan critics, even if they do belong to or affiliate with the Republican Party.
I agree, and I hope he listens to you. I hope he listens to you. Senator, thank you, as always. I appreciate it. What do you think? 1-800-520-1234. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.